short track babes.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a couple here and there, but none. There were none Friday night, that's for sure.
Not where I live.
The old no, not where you live either. You are the short track babe. You're the only one, the only woman in attendance.
Yeah, with all my teeth.
Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, it was our fault. We made a mistake. Spider said it was clear. I wasn't clear, and, you know, I didn't want to tear my car up, tear his car up either. I respect everybody, and I demand respect. And, you know, I apologized to the guy when he came over the car, explained to him what happened, and then he took it to another level when he started calling me an idiot and whatever else, and I don't appreciate that. I'm not going to take it. I told him how I feel. I called him out. He didn't show. You know, and so, you know, I'm good with it if he's good with it, but I'm not going to be disrespected by no means.
Yeah, I guess I had a dinner date at Applebee's last night that I didn't find out until it was too late. It's a shame. I love their riblets and boneless wings, but...
All right, folks. Well, welcome to Meet Me at Applebee's. It's
a racing free...
podcast.
A NASCAR-free racing podcast.
It's a... Yeah, I don't know. It's... Stuff happened this weekend, I guess. It was...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Today, feeling pretty apathetic, folks, on this week's episode, so we're going to try to fire through it.
But why, Brian? It's the big monster truck episode. We've been promising these fuckers for weeks.
Yeah, your big special day. Your time to shine.
Maybe I'll get more into it when we get into that segment, I guess. Yeah. I was definitely excited last night watching the show when I found the second version with all the commercials and stuff, so that perked me up for a few minutes.
That's cool.
Now back
down to earth.
Yeah. Well, the last few hours have been a lot of Twitter nonsense, and then also me deciding last minute to go to Atlanta for the NASCAR race in a couple weeks.
Oh,
so
shit, really?
Trying to, yeah, well, it was a deal where, you know, so my friend Mike from First 7-Inch Club, we've talked about on the show plenty of times, yep. Like, he made this, he was like, let's go to Atlanta instead of Chicago race, because the Chicago race is stupid expensive, and, like, we have mutual friends down there in Atlanta, and, yep, and we have a place to stay and all that. So I was like, I don't know if I can afford it, and I was planning on driving, and I was like, fuck, well, that's not going to happen, because it's 11 hours and, like, hundreds of dollars in tolls and gas. Then I looked at flights, and it's like, oh, flights are under $150. Well, I guess I can, and that's for like a 24-hour. Like, I'm just basically flying in Sunday morning, leaving Monday afternoon, like in and out.
Not bad at all.
Yeah. So, fuck it. And I guess I'll be going to the Mid Ohio Truck Race the day before, so I've got a full weekend that week.
Oh shit, that's awesome. Good for you.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, I got a free ticket to the truck race at least, so that all worked out. So, racing, folks. I am going racing again. I'm excited.
And you were just at the what track were you at this past weekend? I know you were hanging out there and you were posting some stuff on the internet. What was that again? It was an asphalt track with sprint cars. I saw that.
Yeah. So this past week in Ohio was Ohio Sprint Speed Week, which I've never actually gone to any of those races because like most of the dirt tracks are over an hour away. Meanwhile, here in the Cleveland area, we do have a couple of asphalt tracks within a half hour of my house, and I was at a place called Lorain County Speedway, which is right, a 3/8 mile asphalt oval.
Yeah, the Isma.
Three mile oval.
I said 3/8.
It's huge.
Massive. Absolutely massive.
13-hour street stock feature, you know. Yeah. Killer.
Bring your binoculars.
Watch them little Ford Fiestas buzz around, blowing up at 50 miles an hour.
See, there were none of those. So there were only three classes there on Friday.
They had Isma, right?
Yeah, Isma Super Modifieds. We had the 410 Sprints because that was, I don't know what other asphalt tracks the sprint cars are running this week, but Lorain was one of them. And some, I guess they were midgets. I think they were midgets. They were very tiny, but they looked like Super Modifieds but without wings. I couldn't really tell what class they were, but they're
like
very
a dwarf
small
kind of thing.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Cool.
Now, I had planned on getting there around 7 because that's when the actual racing had started, and much to my chagrin, as soon as I show up right as the first heat was starting, the track announcer, I hear Johnny Benson's out of the race and looks like he totaled his car, and I was like, what? And turns out, I looked at Twitter, and Johnny Benson himself was supposed to race Super Modifieds that day, and what actually happened with him was he wrecked out in hot laps.
Big hit, too.
Yeah, yeah. He said the car was probably done for the year, I guess. So, long story short.
Whole damn year.
I guess. So, long story short, I ended up going in the pits because it was a very small little track and nobody was doing security or anything. So, I just kind of walked back there and I ended up meeting him, and he was very, very nice guy, like incredibly nice. And, you know, he told me that he runs for a team that's based out of Canada. And I thought he was living in Michigan. I figured after he was done with NASCAR, he moved back to Michigan. But he said, no, he's still in North Carolina. And, yeah, that car only has, I think they run with another driver kind of more on a full-time basis.
Well, ran.
Johnny's car. Yeah, ran. Johnny's car only was planning to run Oswego and Lorain and maybe one or two other races. And he's like, we don't know if we can get a fix for Oswego in a couple weeks. So he might be done. But regardless, it was cool to meet him.
Tough cars to work on for sure.
Yeah, but yeah, it was cool. Not my first time seeing super mods. First time seeing sprint cars though, and they were fun. But you know, definitely, asphalt short tracks are not nearly as fun to watch as asphalt dirt track racing. And hopefully, sometime in the next few weeks, I'm gonna make it out to Fremont, and I gotta check and see when the next Outlaw race is coming to Sharon, because I'd like to go check those guys out. And hopefully, in July, I'll also be going up to New York and going to Lebanon Valley. So there's my short track report for the day. So,
well, good.
That's my personal bit of racing news. What about you guys? What's new?
Oh, not a whole lot. By the way, the Outlaws were already at Sharon.
Well, that was the was it the actual Outlaws?
That was World of Outlaws sprints. But they're coming back in September. Don't worry about it. They usually do two stops. Yes, the 23rd of September is when they're going to be back.
Okay, yeah. Well, hopefully I'll try to make it out there in September.
Hell yeah. Yeah, Outlaw shows are always fucking awesome. I think the late models are coming to Sharon too. But yeah, there actually was a lot of racing this weekend, despite NASCAR having a little nap for the weekend. RTJ picking up a big win over at Smoky Mountain. That was pretty cool. Again, this is still a late model podcast, at least for the next 30 seconds. So he got the job done. Of course, I think everyone kind of expected that to happen because he's been just whooping ass everywhere he goes. The number one ranked short track driver in the country right now. So good for old Ricky Thornton Jr. Also, some sad news coming out about Scott Blomquist announcing he's got cancer. So thoughts, prayers, whatever you want to send up, whatever sort of weird Tesla-esque energy you've got, you know, whatever it is you want to send to Scott, give it to him, because that guy's a fucking titan of motorsports and generally a pretty good guy too, from what I gather. So
absolutely
hated to hear that. So we're thinking about you, Scott. But yeah,
maybe that's why he couldn't race.
I mean, it's undoubtedly that was the reason he didn't race the Dream and has not been racing at all. And I'll be honest, I heard some rumblings about that, but I didn't want to say anything about it because it's not my business. But yeah, health was definitely a reason he alluded to, and now this makes a lot more sense now that it's out in the open. So we're thinking about you, Scott, because goddamn, no weak links, baby. Mm-hmm. What else happened? Alex Palou won the IndyCar race. That was pretty fun. F1 was in Canada. You know, who fucking really cares? Future NASCAR track, apparently. I'm not going to say who won that, because you can just guess.
Yeah, we don't have to say.
I mean, not that Indy was extremely much of a closer race anyways. I mean, I think it was, they had, Palou had like a 4-second lead, I want to say. But I think, didn't something happen there?
More exciting than...
Yeah, I mean, it absolutely was more exciting. I had it on, but I wasn't like paying incredibly close attention to it.
Yeah, if you were paying attention, the broadcast team for NBC is for IndyCar is one of the best in the game, period. And they do a good job of covering a lot of the field. And there are some pretty tense battles going on throughout the field. And yeah, great job from that broadcast team, and a good race. And congratulations to Alex Palou, I guess. Speaking of Ganassi, old Takuma Sato just announced that he's going to be back for the rest of the ovals this year. So that's fucking good news for Ganassi. So
cool.
Might get to see him bend a couple more cars before the year's over. Almost win, but then bend him in half. So, yeah. How about you, True Love? What'd you do this weekend?
What did I do? Nothing.
Not a goddamn thing.
No, I'm taking a racing hiatus till I go to Atlanta.
Yeah, that's 2 weeks. That's after Nashville, right?
No, it's Nashville,
it's 2 weeks
Chicago,
from this
and then Atlanta.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Oh, also, the ASA tour, I believe. Was it ASA? They're up at Milwaukee. Ty Majeski won that. So, good to see race cars out there on the Milwaukee mile again. And I guess that truck race is coming up pretty soon, isn't it?
Where, Milwaukee?
Yeah.
I don't know that schedule that well off the top of my head, so I'll have to take your word for it.
Yeah. We'll go
I did see something about Roger Penske attending the ASA race, and possibly some rumblings that Indy is heading back there soon too, so that could be cool.
I would hope so. That's one of I love a good flat mile oval for Indy cars, and again, I think they haven't gone there in about 10 years now, I don't think, but I always enjoyed that one. Definitely a legacy track, you know. They used to run it every weekend after Indianapolis like clockwork, so it'd be cool to see that come back, especially now that Roger, being a not only a participant in the history of the sport, but a an enthusiast, and he owns the damn thing, so hopefully he can make that happen and make my little traditionalist heart just flutter. If you're listening to this, Roger, do it for Rob. Do it for Daddy.
God.
gross. Absolutely gross.
Do it for Daddy.
No. We'll put that on some t-shirts.
Yeah.
Wasn't there like a Cars Tour race too with a pretty exciting finish?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Carson Quaffle got it. I think he was. Was it Brandon Queen?
Butterbean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was badass. Yeah. So a lot of racing, and especially if you're a Flow Racing subscriber, you had too much to watch, and I get overwhelmed with that shit, man. there's just so much I want to watch, and like I try and take in the entire fucking buffet whenever I can. And ever since Flow stopped testing out the Flow Zone, I don't know if you guys ever saw that.
I don't know.
No.
That sounds...
They would put up like multiple races on one screen. So it's like you had your own little private racing exclusive Buffalo Wild Wings in your house. It was fucking awesome. And then they stopped doing it. So I don't know who I got to fucking get a hold of at Flow, like Dillner or whoever the fuck. I'm going to text his ass and tell him.
I feel like that's like a novelty thing, though. Like, how can you really watch six different races at once?
Well, let's.
I can't.
I'll try. I will fucking try. Bring back the Flow Zone. For Daddy.
Speaking of Flow, I did watch the first episode finally of Dirt last night, and I really got a kick out of that. Holy shit, yeah, that's F1 doesn't do anything for me. The IndyCar and NASCAR shows were not that exciting, but Dirt hooked me right away, so I'll be watching more of that tonight, I think.
Yeah, it's amazing to me how and actually, I'll be honest, I haven't watched the IndyCar one, so I don't know if it was a miss or not. To me, like, it being placed on the CW was sort of a indicator of maybe what we were getting.
It's an interesting move.
And it's Vice. Their documentaries at least look good, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the fact that, CW is free, which is good, so theoretically you're reaching a bigger audience, but yeah, it's also the fucking CW, so, like, who actually watches it?
I didn't realize that station still existed.
Honestly, until I heard that IndyCar show was going to be on there, that's same thought. I had no fucking clue. But yeah, Dirt is great. That's how you make a documentary about racing, and particularly one that is sort of in progress. That's how you do it. So,
yeah. I will say, who was it? What the hell is his name? Justin
Grant.
That's an intense guy, let me tell you.
Yeah.
when he fucks up the finish to the one heat race and just flips
the chili bowl,
out like oof. I can see that guy being no fun to be around a lot of times.
Yeah, that's to be the first impression for Justin Grant for most of the United States. Yeah, that's a hell of a way to say hello to everybody. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's Chili Bowl, man. That shit's tough. You fuck up and you find yourself. And I guess, well, actually, not in his case. He only lost a few positions in the main for that one, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, but he made it seem like all of a sudden, because he didn't finish second in this heat, that, yeah, now he was going to finish back, and now he's got to go through this race, and he's got to win this race. And he definitely made it seem like he just added six steps to a possible win.
Yeah.
I don't know if he actually did or not. But
kudos to them for capturing that, and they let that fly. And that really is emotions that those guys go through. And again, if you bury yourself in the Chili Bowl, you are kind of fucked.
Yeah.
So, yeah, great to see all that shit on television. And again, if you haven't watched it yet, check out Dirt. Brian just stamped it. The Speedway screen's stamp of approval.
Absolutely.
If anyone's listening that doesn't know what the chili bowl is, we're over here talking about people burying themselves in the chili bowl.
Yeah, alphabet soup.
It's a little...
If you don't know what the chili bowl is and you're listening to this show, then I encourage you, Google it. Please. That, honestly, that's the most fun fucking event. And we can talk about this. We have nothing else to talk about till we get to monster trucks, but that's the most fun event of the year. I swear to God. Like, I love Indy and I love all the pomp and circumstance and the ceremony before it and how they qualify and everything. I love that shit. But the chili bowl is just a week straight of indoor midget racing. Racing every single night. And again, if you have Flow Racing, this is the reason why I was really sold on Flow as a concept, is because it used to cost a lot of money to watch the Chili Bowl. It was like 30 or 40 bucks a night, and then it would switch over to MAV TV on Saturday, and you pay all that money, you can't even really watch the A main, and you have to sign up for like a free cable subscription or Fubo or some shit. And now that it's all on Flow, it's just one stop, and you pay the same amount you'd pay for like two or three nights for an entire year's worth of racing. This is not sponsored by Flow, by the way. I'm just putting this out here.
Rob works part-time for Flow. He
I
just
feel like
want
I fucking
to admit it.
Do sometimes. Still waiting for my first paycheck.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Chili Bowl is just, yeah, five or six nights of awesome midget racing. There's a big sort of main event every single night, or qualifying race. There's always heavy hitters in there. There's people from all over the racing world. Chase Elliott's run it. Santino Ferrucci's always out there. Alex Bowman has a few cars he puts out there. You know, it's a big deal in pretty much every racing community now. And that's, of course, where Brian Clausen really showed everybody how special he was. Not just there, but, you know, that was definitely a place where he dominated. And, yeah, it's just, if you don't know anything about dirt racing, that is a great place to start. And there's fuck all going on at that time in the winter. It's like in January, so.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, watch the Chili Bowl. There's so much shit on the internet about it, especially put out by Flow, that since they have all the broadcast rights for all the old shit too, so you can really immerse yourself in that. And again, the Dirt documentary does go into some depth about what it is, so I would recommend that highly. And I guess you guys would probably back me up on that, unless you guys don't know what the Chili Bowl is. Brian?
No, I usually try to bootleg stream it somehow every year.
We always have a conversation about like which service we're using this year to watch it, because nobody has fucking MAV TV on their cable.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to get down there one of these times. Alex always makes it seems like a good week, but that's also a week of fucking racing and partying, which isn't really my style. So maybe for the weekend I'd be down, but...
That was a disapproving from Rob.
Listen, there's only I got a limit. I got a party limit. I got a racing limit. Like, I got a limit with anything I do in life. Like, there's only so much. I can't go to like 6 days worth of racing. I just can't. Like, I can't do too much. Anything is bad. So I'm a guy who likes to limit that. You know. As it is.
Well, this is
a man of
final episode.
A man of moderation.
Yeah, I got a lot of different hobbies. I got a lot of different things I'm into.
He's
I can't
catch some kittens.
Yeah, that's
in the backyard.
True.
Yes, my fucking kitten escaped twice today. He's a real asshole.
Twice. Jeez.
Twice. He got out twice.
So. You gotta send him back.
Yeah, gotta send him back to Amazon. Yeah.
Yep.
Put him in the poly bag and take him down to the UPS store and scan him, and I'll send you a new one.
Oh, God. Let me think what else we can talk about. So,
well, we're going to Nashville next weekend. Of course, True Love, you had an experience there. I don't know if you want to relive that at all. I know it was kind of tough the first time you went.
That was their first year in 2021 was just a fucking shit show.
Yeah.
They still don't allow coolers in, so you're never going to get me to go there. Not even close.
Yeah, I have a hard time with that. Yeah. A NASCAR race is
a night race now, so it's not like the hottest part of the day, but
yeah, it's still on Sunday, isn't it?
It is. It's a Sunday night race.
What the
out
fuck?
A holiday the next day. So
well, so is Atlanta.
Yeah, so is Atlanta.
I don't understand that shit.
Which
man.
Is part of the so Atlanta, like, why the hell are they doing two? Like, I thought their second race was going to be either in the playoffs or like a cutoff race or something. Not July. I mean, whatever, but it's just weird that they have two dates that are in the regular series.
Yeah, there's one thing everybody knows is that Georgia is just a perfectly pleasant place to be in the middle of July. Yeah. Can you vouch for that, True Love, as a resident?
Yeah. Last year,
beautiful
July race, was miserable. So fucking hot. I just sat in my seat the whole time because I didn't want to move and like work up a sweat. Yeah. I just sat there.
Jesus,
and
it's already in the high 80s there in Atlanta.
No wonder your flight was like $80 to get down there.
Yeah, well, you know, like
they'll bus them in however they can, I guess, this time of year. Good God.
But I am excited to see like a night race there. That'll be, you know, a new experience.
That would be cool.
I'll be going with a bunch of non-racing fans, so it'll be a real experience for me.
I'll be going with my entire family. So.
Yeah, I'll be watching from.
You can meet the fam, Brian.
Oh, I guess I can do that. Yeah. I've already interacted with your brother, I think, on social media, but obviously have not met the rest of the family.
Yeah. And not on Twitter, I hope.
Definitely not on Twitter. Which, here we go. Then now we can segue
here we
into
go.
My Twitter comments.
Yeah, a little alley-oop for you there, buddy.
A couple fun things happened. So, Tim Vaines decided to open his mouth yet again, and he is apparently quote unquote sponsored by Trump Airlines. But much like I think the last time, I don't think it is. I don't think that's
at all
a thing.
It was at one point, but not anymore.
He's got a photo in front of him with that stupid fucking alt-right rapper that wrote the Back the Blue song and that other one that just came out recently in front of like Trump's plane.
I'm not from Ohio. I don't know about any of that stuff. So
It's you don't need that's just know it's bad. The Back the Blue song had like I think it had Mike Harmon in it like in the video because I think that's when Mike Harmon was driving the Trump truck. Maybe I'm getting these mixed up, but regardless.
This is something I need to Google, I guess, because I want to see
this a lot of shit. Tim Vaines just decided to tweet, I'm right-wing, I'm a Trump supporter, and check out my new vehicle. And then he's like, maybe I'll do a Truth Social truck.
The check won't bounce.
Yeah, this guy's already has no money. I guarantee Trump's not giving him any money at all. So he's just making himself look stupider and stupider.
What was it, like the Trump Winery or something?
Trump Winery, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it, Trump Winery.
I guess that's plausible.
Trump doesn't fucking drink wine. Trump doesn't drink. Why the fuck would he have a winery?
He's a businessman. He's got his hands in everything, man.
That's another tax shelter, I guess.
But yeah, that guy doesn't give a fuck about anybody. I don't care how you feel about the guy, but when it comes to this sort of thing in NASCAR, like if you ever see his name on a car, it definitely came from like a pack or something like that, but it didn't come from Trump's own hand. He doesn't give a fuck. That guy is about to go to court and needs a lot of money, and he just implicated himself on Fox News on some shit. So he needs a good lawyer, and I don't think he's handing out money to NASCAR truck teams to start and park. So, you know, it's the same thing with Matt DiBenedetto again. Like, I don't care what your political beliefs or your religious beliefs are, whatever that shit is, but like, when you start pandering to with that in mind, I just feel like it's a very big gamble, and you're kind of putting your career on the line when you do that sort of thing. And if those are the guns you want to stick to, then that's fine. Be you. I really don't care, but I just don't see that really working out for anybody, and clearly it hasn't worked so far.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't worked for anyone. Any single person that has been like an outward Trump supporter, run a Trump car, or tried to capitalize on their Trump supporter fan base, like Brandon Brown, it's just all failed. So,
poor Brandon's story is fucked.
Brandon's story is a little bit different. I'll give him that.
I'll say that Brandon Overton made more money on the old selling Let's Go Brandon shit than Brandon Brown did. Let the late model community come in and sop all that money up. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. And speaking of that, there I forget who put it out, but there recently was like a 18 or 19 little mini documentary about the entire Brandon Brown story.
Really?
It's on YouTube. I'll have to find it and send the link and whatnot. But for those who don't know the whole fucking story, you know, about the Brandon himself and the chant and everything, it's very good and it's very concise. And yeah, it does paint Brandon out to be a victim, because I hate to say it, but he kind of is. Like, he reached his dream. He finally won a race, and it completely ruined his career.
Yeah, who the fuck cares?
So
poor guy.
Yep. And in other social media news,
We're calling this news.
I guess it's not so much news. Spotter Brett,
your best friend,
my buddy Spotter Burt, decides to continue to run his mouth about Chicago and violence and this, that, and the other thing, both under
St.
his
Louis.
Name. Yeah,
St.
Louis.
Indianapolis.
This, that, and the other thing, and also through the Couch Racer brand, which is, I think, another way for him to kind of espouse his opinions without damaging Door Bumper Clear or his own name, even though it's him.
Too late for that.
Yeah. Freddie Kraft, after seeing a lot of negative tweets about spotters from fans the last few days, because I guess there's Eric Almirola's spotter is another one who's said a lot of the same stuff as Brett. It's led to a lot of generalizations from fans that a lot of spotters are just, right-leaning, xenophobic, prejudicial idiots. And Freddie Kraft decided to speak up against that, and not so much speak out against what his buddy Brett said, but more just the fact that fans are saying all spotters are assholes. And you know, Freddie, I don't think that really was the tactic to use. He's like, well, if you guys want to give me shit for being friends with Brett, that's fine, but just know that not all spotters are like Brett. I'm like, okay, well, you're not doing yourself any favors. It's like bad cops or bad doctors or whatever. Like, if there's one bad one and all the rest of them look the other way and don't acknowledge how much of an asshole the one is, that makes all of them bad.
I don't know if that's a one-for-one translation there,
I'm not saying that personally. Yeah. But I would say some fans might see it that way.
Yeah.
But it's also
Twitter certainly does.
But when your biggest, loudest, spotter and the one who, you know, makes himself, it seems like he likes to speak for everybody else. That's how he presents himself. When that's the guy who's representing the rest of your peers, maybe he's not the guy you want representing your peers if he gets that much backlash.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. And with the whole brand thing, I'm sure Freddie feels compelled. I don't know the guy either, but I'm sure he feels compelled to try and hit it all sides because he is in business with these dudes and all that. I don't know.
He has to, yeah. And, you know, he spots for Bubba Wallace, who is the...
works for Michael Jordan.
Yeah, works for Michael Jordan, and who is the enemy of a lot of Brett's fans, the least favorite driver of a lot of Brett's fans. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how that works. You know, I really don't get it. And again, you know, there's plenty of people in NASCAR who, have more liberal, more progressive views, and there are plenty that are the opposite direction. But no matter which side you lean on, if one guy is making everybody else look bad, you got to do something about it. So
throw him off the spotter stand.
Yes.
Gather together.
Well, Brett kind of threw himself off the spotter stand. He don't really do it that much anymore, but...
Well, you know, I'm sure he gets pretty stumbly up there, too, which doesn't help.
But here's my thing, though. Like, if you... Just don't say anything. Like, why do you feel compelled... And I know it's probably because he is involved with the brand and all that, but, like, if you don't want to feel the wrath of Twitter and interact with these people, then don't do it. No one's making you be up there and do it. And honestly, like, if no one else is saying anything and there's one asshole who's out there doing it, I almost feel like letting that guy sink his own boat is just as effective as going out there and being a fucking warrior on the internet. You know, it's just like, I don't understand why you have to insert yourself in a situation like that. Not you, Brian, but, your group is getting attacked on a whole. Like, those people are idiots because it's not true. You know, so I don't know. I just think all that shit is stupid. But
it is very stupid. But every once in a while...
It's fun to play, though, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. I tend to get... Listen, I've been a poster for over 20 years. I've been on the internet since I was in middle school, so
yes.
I've got a lot of experience talking shit online. So, yeah, that's the social media update.
Has Brett blocked you? Have you been blocked?
No, never has. Never has. He threatened me once, and he threatened me years ago and told me to show up to a race, and when I DM'd him, he never responded. So, still hasn't blocked me, though. Won't respond to me anymore.
Yeah, some people just don't need to have that instant platform.
No, definitely not.
That's all I'll
Especially
say.
When you're an alcoholic. That doesn't help.
Oh, damn.
You got any more news?
Look at him, man. Look at his breaking news. Look at his face. If you can't tell, look at his fucking nose. His nose tells a story. That's all I'm gonna say.
Jesus Christ.
You're first, y'all.
I'm over here praying for Scott Bloomquist, and you're out here assault Sherman's march to the fucking sea out here. Jesus Christ.
I just hate people that suck. Oh, man. He sucks.
Prayers up to the aliens for Scott.
I don't want him to go home anytime soon, back up to the mothership.
Absolutely not.
Send down a cure.
Yeah, and Brett, just turn your phone off for a little bit. Yeah, please.
throw it off the spotter stand.
Yeah, seriously. Has the big announcement happened yet with Josh Berry? Has that happened?
It's happening tomorrow. So.
Yeah, tomorrow.
Yeah.
I wonder, you know, I don't know. I'm starting to lose hope that announcement is going to be anything more than just Josh going to that car, but I guess we'll see.
I feel like that's going to be the case, and if there's more to it later on, we'll hear about it once that's done. But, yeah, pretty cool for him. I think the big piece in play here is whether or not Anheuser-Busch is going to stick around now because Josh Berry's there. I don't know why they would, to be perfectly honest. Like, I think short track people really love Josh Berry, but outside of that, like, you know, if you have the opportunity to go out there and sponsor Ross Chastain, who is one of the only drivers that anyone really knows outside of NASCAR, I feel like that's probably who you go to, and Daniel Suarez as well. So I think the track house thing probably makes sense for them. That seems to be the prevailing theory of where that Budweiser money is going to go. So
I better finish up this pack of Busch Light peaches real quick before Ross signs that deal.
Yeah, y'all drinking that children's beer, huh?
It's pretty delicious.
Listen, motherfucker, you were drinking.
It's a good little summer beer.
You were drinking fucking toilet water last week that was just sugar with booze in it. So don't give us shit about drinking
candy bars.
Some slightly fruity beers. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it wasn't a children's beer, so. It says right on the can 12 and under. No, I actually got handed one of those, and I thought it was one of, like, the corn cans, you know?
Yeah.
When I was at Eldora, and I looked at it, and I was like, what in the fuck? Like, and it was a cooler full of them, and I was looking to shotgun a beer, so I handed it off. I wasn't ready for any surprises.
Ashley, do they taste like peach tea, like I was told, or what?
Yeah, maybe not, you know, there's not, like, a tea flavor, but I really like it a lot. Whole lot more than I liked Busch Apple. I didn't like Busch Apple at all.
See, I love the apple, so I guess we'll see how peach treats me. I'm not a huge fan of fake peach flavor for whatever reason, so, but I'll still try it.
Yeah. Be drinking some of these at Atlanta, for sure.
To
beat
go.
The heat stroke.
Yeah, 140 degrees southern night. 108% humidity.
Mm-hmm. That's us.
Well, I suppose if you're drinking Busch Light all day, you'll be hydrated at least, so you can...
Yeah, exactly.
Brian, is your cat going to pop on the show here at any point?
No, I'm shocked you can't hear my dog barking at the mailman right now.
I can't hear him.
I can hear that.
Dog, okay, yeah. Even, again, through
He's
multiple
He's probably trying
doors.
To tell you that the cat has escaped for a third
Brian?
Cat? Cat, all the doors are shut right now. The cat's
That's
fine.
That's what you think.
Shoot through the screen!
Whatever. Anyway.
Yeah. Man, I'm so stoked for you guys to go to Atlanta. That's fun. That's really fun. I would love to go to Atlanta at some point. I really hate that I missed the old Atlanta because that was my favorite mile and a half. But, you know, from what you guys have told me, the new one seems fine too.
Yeah,
so
it's fun. It's
I'll join
time.
You down there one of these days.
Yeah. I'll save you some Busch Light peaches.
Yeah. I will drink whatever's put in front of me.
Yeah. As long as it's cold.
Like whatever's making noise in the background of Brian's house, I am also a dog.
Well, that was the mailman is finally gone, so now he stopped barking, so we're good to go.
Good
there.
Boy. How about this video of the week, bud? Well, actually, do we have a dart for the week? I don't think we really do, do we?
Nah, I don't.
Brian just rattled off every.
He's talked to all of them.
We have dumbass NASCAR employees this week, so
I do want to give a shout out. I do want to give a shout out to Eric Jones here for celebrating Grimace's McDonald's favorite character Grimace. It was his birthday over the weekend, and Eric Jones wished him a happy birthday. And it was
Eric is the king of tweeting out the most random shit at like 2 in the morning on Twitter.
Yeah, in the midst of all this nonsense and vitriol and hatred, there's just Eric Jones shouting out Grimace. So kudos to you, sir. That made me smile as wide as could be. So
so he gets the opposite of Dar for the Week award.
Yeah, man, SHR ought to buy him out and put him in a shit box. The Toyota thing might be good. I'm curious to see how that goes. I just want to see Eric in a good car again. I really do. I feel for him this year.
Yeah. So yeah, no dumbass race fans, just dumbass NASCAR employees. That brings us to our next installment of my History of Monster Truck Racing series. And we're skipping to 1987 this time around. The Pontiac Silverdome, which I think we might have seen some clips from there in some of our other videos, but
I think so, yeah.
Silverdome was the home of a lot of monster truck history. It's the home of the first car crush by Bigfoot, at least publicly, and a lot of racing over the years, a lot of truck pulling and mud bogging and all that stuff.
Wasn't there even a late model race in there?
There was.
Some point? An ASA
actually,
race? Yeah.
Yeah, I actually have a program from that, too.
Do you really?
I'll have to dig it up, but I found it at an estate sale in Detroit last year, and the guy had a bunch of monster truck shit and just happened to have a program from that race, so I do have proof of that.
If that video exists, we should talk about that on here at some point. But
yes,
that's
I want to say I looked it up, and I think it does. I think there is some video footage of it.
I don't know if it's like the whole broadcast, but I know there's like clips and stuff like that. But if there's a longer video, we should definitely watch that at some point. But yeah, if you guys don't know what that is, Google ASA Pontiac Superdome, and you'll see some wild shit. But anyway, back to monster trucks.
Back to it. So this video is from the USHRA, which, if you somehow don't know that name, they are still the quote-unquote sanctioning body of monster trucks to this day, and the ones behind Monster Jam. But in this time period, they were really heavy, even though they're called the Hot Rod Association. They were mainly into truck pulling, truck and tractor pulling, and that led to monster trucks as that sport progressed. And in the 80s, I mean, they were a touring company that toured all around the U.S. with these shows and ran arenas and stadiums and all that. And as monster trucks grew, it went from being just an exhibition thing like we saw in other past iterations of this video series to now a monster truck racing thing. And for this tour, being that the Silverdome is absolutely massive, they made as good a use of the place as possible for this time period. They had not one, but two tractors set up for this event so they could do tractor pulling races, which is not something that happened at most tractor pulling events. And we're actually going to skip. This is a four-part video because I found the entire broadcast with commercials in it, but we're going to skip part one just because that's all tractor pulling, and we've kind of talked about tractor pulling already on the show, and there's really, other than seeing two of them run at once, there's not really much else that I have to say about that stuff. However, this video has the monster trucks racing these things as part of their overall race. Basically, what the course was set up so that two tractors with two monster trucks pulling them, they'd run about 100 feet. There'd be somebody next to the truck to unhook it, and then the guys would hit a U-turn and then sprint at a set of cars.
It's just what I do in the Kroger parking lot.
So, again, this was the last episode that we watched. We had just two sets of cars with no dirt, trucks just basically crawling over top of them. They're breaking parts, barely finishing the race, and this video wasn't too different from that. There was a lot of trucks breaking, a lot of weird racing incidents, and it's very clear that in 1987, even though racing itself and the trucks were starting to progress, they still had a lot of work to do as far as becoming an actual racing series. But we start off this video with a brief interview with a guy named Butch. Butch is the guy that finds the cars for these events, and he ran a junkyard and towing company. When asked what does USHRA look for, Butch just replied, they like big cars. He says most of the cars were abandoned, stuff he found on the side of the road, and would tow back to his lot, and they would just use those things to get smushed by the trucks. And then afterwards, they just go head off to the crusher where they're turned into cubes and processed however the hell they process them. He had his whole family with him for this little 2-minute interview, and I think Butch looks like the type of person that you would expect to gather up crushed cars for a monster truck show.
Yeah, him and his son had on their little matching outfits from the company that he owns.
Well, yeah, you gotta represent the company on TV. Get whatever little bit of plug you can get right
there. That's a great
man of, he was a man of few words, Butch.
Yes.
That's a great description of that guy. Also a great thing to put in your Twitter bio. The kind of guy who rounds up crushed cars.
So the first video, or the first race, was Bigfoot, which obviously we've seen Bigfoot plenty of times, and another vehicle we've seen plenty of times, saw in the last video, the Monster Vet of Cliff Starbird. And this was not really a contest. If you remember anything from the last few videos, you have Bigfoot, which is basically the biggest name in monster trucks with the most money behind it, and then the Monster Vet, which barely could get over a pile of cars. And that's basically how this race played out. Bigfoot got off to a huge lead, and then flew over the cars, took an easy victory, while the Monster Vet did its little crawling over the cars. I think it might have done a little wheelie over the top of them, but that'd be about it. Next up, another truck we've seen before, Barefoot, this time owned by Fred Schaefer. If you guys remember the last time we saw Barefoot, it was still owned by Jack Willman. This is after the split. At this point, Fred Schaefer owned Barefoot, and Jack had already built a couple of Taurus trucks. So you don't see Taurus at this show, but you do see Barefoot. Up against a truck called the Toy, which was a little Toyota truck that ran on skinnier tractor tires and had a little wheel, like a wind-up wheel that spun the entire time out of the back of the bed. This is another non-contest, as the Toy broke a drive shaft right off the line while pulling the tractor. Barefoot took an easy victory. Again, this is a prime example of a lot of these trucks not being ready for competition. The trucks being display vehicles, meant right. for show, not for go. Whereas Barefoot had already been on the circuit for many years, and that truck was ready to race and perform. One of the announcers, I didn't get the one announcer's name, but the other one was Mike Galloway, who had a lot of influence and a lot of work in the monster truck broadcasting of the 80s. He was in so many different races, so many different videos, and he just screams a lot. Loves to scream. And he does that quite a bit at times when he doesn't necessarily need to scream. We get a round of commercials here. There's a Duraliner bedliner ad that runs probably every commercial break, and once you see the truck that it sponsors later on in the show, it kind of makes sense as to why they're such big sponsors of it. There's also an ad for Little Caesars featuring the Noid, which was a very popular claymation ad campaign in the 80s, which I was a huge fan of because I loved anything claymation. Yeah, even though we didn't have Domino's where I was, but
Noid toys, and like there was like a video game too.
Yeah. The Noid was huge. It was massive. It's one of those weird 80s mascots up there with like the Energizer Bunny and the 7-Up Spot and all these weird little characters that companies had in their ads in the 80s. And then there's also a Purelator ad with this young greaser-looking guy. And I don't know if you guys could recognize him, but I'm about 90% sure that guy, he was... I can't think of what fucking show he was on. It was either... I don't think he was the guy who was in the first season of Parks and Rec, but he was in some other 90s sitcom that I can't put my finger on.
He
was definitely an actor, and it's one of those things when you watch old 80s commercials, a lot of times you'll see young actors either as kids or just starting out who did a lot of commercials in the 80s, and I have to look his name up to see who he was, but I just got a personal kick out of that. And then there was a very cool Chillwave ESPN ad with just satellite dishes with some you know, chill, vibey music playing in the background, which I got a kick out of. And then from there, we get a B-roll montage of footage of the engines and drivetrains and undercarriages of the trucks and tractors while the announcers talk about the costs associated with a lot of these vehicles and maintaining them throughout the seasons. And then the next race is the Dirtliner Giant, which is a truck I just mentioned, versus Heartbeat, which was another basic full-size Chevy pickup that was actually making its first ever race that weekend at the Silverdome. And boy, oh boy, the editing of these parts of the video, you miss the tractor pulling portion of the race, but the real action comes when the trucks hit the cars. You see the Dirtliner Giant break its axle just launching off the cars, and by the time it lands, the thing is completely folded up. And then on the other side of the track, you don't even see it. They don't ever show a replay, but the Heartbeat completely lost its axle, like just gone. Both wheels off the truck, the thing's laying on its frame. Truck was just not ready, like clearly just finished it, and the axles, the frame itself looked super weak. And you can tell later on, this truck ran quite a bit throughout the late 80s and early 90s, and they figured it out. But it started out as this just black Chevy that they painted up with all these like short track sponsors, and the thing just looks like shit. And compared to the other trucks that had really beautiful paint schemes, or like at least themed, you know, schemes, and meanwhile you just got the Heartbeat that has 16 different little sponsors all inside of it. And then both trucks shit the bed on the race and don't make it out of the next round.
Yeah, it's like a very expensive mess.
Quite a bit. Well, we'll get into it once the actual racing starts, the next couple videos we watch. But yeah, none of these trucks have the right axles, the right hubs, anything. Like they're just meant to look at and maybe climb up shit, not actually leave the ground at all, which is why both of them were destroyed. But the next race features two trucks that again have lots of experience. Samson versus Excalibur. Excalibur, along with Virginia Giant, who we're going to see the next round, were two of the first trucks I ever actually saw live as a kid. And this is a funny story, but my parents took me to see this show probably late 88, early 89. It was Virginia Giant, Excalibur, Star Monster, and Rambo, who were two Western New York trucks that I saw quite a bit as a kid. But earlier that day, before the show, I ended up riding my bike in my neighbor's driveway super fast down this hill and falling and hitting my head. And then later that night, I ended up going to a monster truck show. And I don't know. To me, I feel like there's some connection there as to why, to this day, at almost 40 years old, I'm obsessed with this era of monster trucks. I don't know if that day had something to do
with
it.
Could be why you can't watch 6 days of racing in a row as well.
It could also be part of that, for sure. But yeah, this race was pretty good. Excalibur was definitely not geared for pulling because both of its runs on the sled were super, super slow, whereas Samson was definitely geared right for it and took an early lead off the sled. But Excalibur made up for it in the very end, took a huge leap over the cars and easily passed Samson on the back straight.
Yeah.
And then you get a great example of Mike Galloway screaming, look out, look out, look out. He does that. That's one of his catchphrases. It's just yelling, look out, as many times as he can.
I did notice a lot of people running on a hot track too.
Well, that's the 80s were fucking wild. Yeah. People were feet from the cars, feet from the track. Like
the nobody guy whose job it was to like unhook the sled from the truck.
Yeah.
Did not seem like a safe gig at all.
I don't think OSHA was an organization in the 80s. At least they weren't going to these meets, that's for damn sure.
Well, while there's no footage of it, there were a few deaths in the 90s that put a huge stop to that. And even one a couple years ago, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
One
thing I do want to shout out real quick, sorry to cut you off, Brian, yeah. But the toy, when it was pulling its sled, the sled had a giant six-pack of Budweiser on there.
Oh yeah, and that was a staple. A lot of those pulling events was that.
It wasn't just the toy. It shows up later on for a couple other trucks too, but. Really, really love the way that looks. Just another example of Budweiser always sort of like, at least back in the day, being on, knowing where to stick their brand. You know, with it's that giant inflatable can, you know. Yeah,
that thing's glorious as well.
They
need to bring those back.
Yes.
Bush, too. I mean, obviously, Bush, it's the same company, but like, they sponsored Art Arfons and the Green Monster, which was one of those jet tractors. And its gas tanks on the side, they eventually painted up as Bush cans, which was fucking cool.
That's sick. Yeah. Take some notes, folks. Mm-hmm. Beer marketing assholes. Yeah. Take some notes. Giant cans is what we're looking for.
That's all we want. Just give us giant humorous cans. Oversized cans.
Seriously.
Then from there, we get another commercial break, and this one is just a nice long NRA commercial. But this is the NRA that was a lot more quaint, and really all those guys
When they actually cared about the Second Amendment, not about money. Yeah.
Yeah, like this was when the NRA was. They had Charlton Heston. He just, you know, you weren't going to pry the gun from his cold dead hands. Yeah. But that's really about all that was going on with those guys.
Just those two nice guys out there in the God's country in their orange vests, just having a good old wholesome time. Just not shooting anything, you know, going home to their wives and saying, "Oh, just nothing was out there," when really all of God's creation was in front of them, and they just were bad shots, and they probably drank too much Budweiser out of giant cans.
Exactly. So,
that's my NRA right there, buddy.
They didn't want to lug any giant heavy animals back to the truck. Yeah.
Wife doesn't eat deer meat to begin with, or
she already told him there's no room in the freezer.
Yeah, and there's no way that big old buckhorn's gonna go up on the wall when he's done with it. But yeah, definitely a nice little glimpse at a time when that organization wasn't what it is now.
Mm-hmm. So next up, we get our final race of the first round of action, the Virginia Giant, which I previously mentioned, up against Wild Stang, which was Cliff Starbird's third monster truck. Now, quick note about Wild Stang. This was another one of these 80s trucks that was massively, massively unsafe. Obviously, in this clip, you know, you eventually see it. It lost handily in the tractor pulling portion, but Cliff wanted to put on a show, and he takes a run at the cars anyways, and much like a couple of the other trucks, breaks an axle just hitting the cars. But what I was saying about Wild Stang being unsafe, there is video footage of this on YouTube of probably around this time, probably maybe the next year, Wild Stang flipped backwards at a monster truck show onto its roof, or its lack of roof. As you guys could see, there was one roll bar there. The driver actually survived, but it is a very scary incident. You know, the thing is completely flat. It looks like there's no way anybody would have made it out of that alive, but he did. And this is one of those vehicles that sat outside the Starboard Museum for well over 20 something years. Out of the three trucks, two were restored, the Vet and Frankenstein from the last video, but I don't think Wild Stang ever was. So I think that's still rotting outside the museum somewhere. For next up, we're in the round two of the racing. We get past the heat races and we're down to the final four. In the first race, though, we see Samson back. Instead of Bigfoot, and we'll find out later on in the show that Bigfoot was disqualified. I guess there was something that happened when he was unhooked from the tractor during his run, and it was unsafe or illegal move. Some weird violation was made where
actions detrimental.
Yeah, the guy that unhooked it didn't get across like the safety line before Bigfoot took off.
There we go. So yeah, he pulled a very unsafe move, and this led to Bigfoot being disqualified. But he decided to challenge the overall winner to a grudge match at the very end of the show. So you got that to look forward to at the very least. So again, Excalibur. Let's see here. Excalibur wins again, which wasn't really a surprise. Again, way faster in the second part, the most important part of the race. Then all of a sudden, you get a random ESPN business update. like out of fucking nowhere. Like, didn't make any sense. Like, not a sports update. Like, what's going on in sports that day with live games? Nope, just business. What's going on in the car, you know, the auto business today? Okay, thank you, ESPN. We get the update on Bigfoot's you know, sled issues. Jim is very apologetic. Jim Cramer, that is, this coming weekend, the 4th of July weekend, he's going to be officially retiring, finally, from driving Bigfoot after over 40 years.
Really?
Yeah, there's the Bigfoot Open House this weekend in St. Louis, and he's going to be doing his final runs in Bigfoot.
Are you going?
No, I'm not going. It's just too far away, unfortunately.
Crime's too bad, you know?
Yeah.
Uncle Kenny and... what's his friend's name?
Peanut.
Come put you up.
His name is not Peanut. It's something similar to Peanut, but it is not Peanut. And one of these days, I'll fucking remember him. I'm surprised you're not going, man. That's quite a historic event. I know it's kind of far.
It's so much of a hike. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I've never gone there or the Gravedigger Shop, because they're both just so far away. And in Gravedigger's case, it's not even that it's so far away. It's that it's in the Outer Banks, which is just like there's zero reason to go to the Outer Banks unless you're going to the Outer Banks. So one of these days I'll get there. It seems like every one of my married friends or people in established relationships who vacationed out there have gone, and including one of my friends who did the Easter egg hunt there a few years ago with his children. I was extremely jealous of that.
Get some kids somewhere.
I'm good not having kids. I can go to the Gravedigger Shop by myself.
Go hunt eggs all while you're lonesome.
Yeah.
Big egg hunt guy. You know?
Let's see. We did Barefoot versus Excalibur. Excalibur beats Barefoot. And then I feel like I skipped a race somewhere.
Bigfoot was disqualified, and then next was Barefoot and the Virginian Giant. That was like the final.
Virginia Giant beat Barefoot, which is a surprise. Yeah. Somewhat of a surprise. And then from there we go to the finals. Barefoot versus Virginia Giant. The Axle of Heartbeat was still on the track, which I got a huge kick out of. It was a very close race with these two guys both being pretty fast. Virginia Giant takes a leap from the sled. Barefoot almost makes up for it, but Virginia Giant still takes the win. And then the grudge match, again, not really much of a race. The Giant couldn't get unhooked from the tractor and obviously lost. And Bigfoot almost cleared the entire set of cars, which was not something that was happening in the 80s, at least this period of the 80s. It puts on a show for the fans, and everybody goes home happy. And that is this edition of Monster Truck Racing History. I think next time around, we'll probably finally check out our first TNT race, which TNT was the Monster Truck Racing series for about 3 years. They ran parallel to USHRA in this time, but as far as actual racing goes and actual TV production, TNT couldn't be beat. But we'll find out more about them in another month or so.
Brian, I love this shit. This is such
any final thoughts from you guys? I mean, I'm glad you guys enjoy it and it lets me talk for a good half an hour, but
yeah, I had never seen the monster trucks like doing these sled pull races ever before. So,
and there, also this I know was a, it was a very short window where this type of racing happened, and in only a couple times did they even have the right type of track set up to do something like this.
Yeah, it's definitely very interesting to see them really figuring out what their sport is even all about outside of the fact that they have these giant ass trucks.
Yeah.
Right. And like there's definitely a little bit of an evolution from the last video we watched, but yeah, it's fascinating like how big of a cultural phenomenon this was becoming, but the actual event itself they still clearly had not ironed out at all.
I was glad to see
it's like
that,
trying to capture lightning in a bottle, you know.
Yeah.
I was glad to see that slick roofs weren't such an issue.
Yeah, they got that
around.
Fixed up.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
they got
no
those bigger,
roofs.
Wider roofs.
Whoa!
I mean, we'll continue to see it. And it really isn't until probably 92, 93, 94 is when they finally get the trucks dialed in as far as technology-wise. And parts breaking, trucks flipping, it becomes less of a problem. But up until then, like, holy shit, like, there's not a race that happens where somebody doesn't miss a round because they broke,
yeah,
or somebody doesn't flip, or just yeah, the trucks had a lot of evolving to do. But you have to realize, too, I mean, this is 1987. It was really only about 4 or 5 years prior that there was ever even a public car crush. To see them go from that to now flying over the cars, you know, not everybody had the technology and the finances to build trucks that could withstand that. And they didn't know until they finally tried to do some of this stuff that their trucks weren't capable of handling it. So, yeah, I mean, as fans, you know, I guess if that was a good show to you, you definitely got a lot of action in that sense. But if you were looking for real racing, it was still a few years away.
Yeah.
Also noticed that a lot of the trucks look the same. They're all big and blue and square. So there must have been like a sale on blue paint or something, because God,
well,
they love
the Bigfoot open house. Yeah.
Yeah. I think part of it was the fact that, you know, Bigfoot was the first truck, and
right,
yeah, even USA One, which, you know, we saw in the last video as the white truck, that was originally blue when it was first built. And a lot of trucks, whether it be King Crunch or Clydesdale or, you know, again, Barefoot, they were all blue to begin with.
Yeah, a lot of Fords, too. You got to remember that,
a lot of Fords.
That blue is kind of the Ford deal. So
it was, well, yeah, all the big truck brands.
Well, Barefoot's a Chevy. I'm looking at that right now, and that's also blue. So I guess,
I mean, you got to realize, too, I mean, that's still when the 80s, there was still a pretty good automotive industry in the U.S. and mm-hmm. This was a way to market to truck guys.
100%.
You know, there was in 87 or 88, there was actually a series of Ford trucks with Bigfoot paint schemes. There was Bigfoot Express. There was like a Bigfoot Ranger they were factory packages you could buy at your local dealership. And the trucks had problems, I guess. I think there were drivetrain issues with them. But they were still cool, and there's still a couple out there that exist. But, you know, expect to spend a pretty penny if you find one, because they only made like 1,000 of them. So
yeah, no doubt this was a marketing tool for the truck industry.
Yeah, and really, Ford was a huge sponsor of Bigfoot up until the early 2000s, and that's when the first ever Bigfoot Chevy was built. And we'll talk about that in a year, maybe.
In one calendar year.
Write it down, folks.
So yeah, that was this week's trip to Applebee's. Next week we've got a bunch of races to talk about. We already went through them. Nashville at the beginning of the year or the weekend. I'm babbling now. What the hell is this?
What's going on?
Whose music is that? It's not me. Oh, it's Rob. The soundtrack.
What are you talking about? Selling some trucks, baby.
There you go.
It's not Space Dixie this week.
Yeah, I was just about to say. I was waiting for that.
I can put that on if you want.
Yeah. Oh God, you know,
finish every show with that from now on.
Real quick though, we will. Speaking of marketing, because this just popped up in my recommends on YouTube recently. In 1989, Volvo was embroiled in controversy when they did an ad with Barefoot in it, and basically
turn this off for that. Kidding me?
The video shows Barefoot crushing over a pile of cars, and there's a Volvo in the stack, and the Volvo's roof does not collapse, even though Barefoot runs over it multiple times. Well, it turns out there was a lawsuit against Volvo under false advertising pretenses because, yes, they reinforced that Volvo in that ad. And
there's a Volvo and it will crush. Yeah. You can die in it.
But to be fair, those old wagons were sturdy as fuck. Like, it was tough to destroy those
things.
That's
a fact, man.
You were not going to be able to run over them with the truck. So, yeah, it's a little monster truck advertising bullshit for you there. But yeah, next week we're at Nashville. Is there any Indy or F1 to talk about, or any short track stuff? Or
they're both off this weekend.
Well, it'll just be back to good old American NASCAR in Nashville.
Well, I mean, there's a bit, Firecracker 100s this weekend for the Lucas Oil 8 models are out at Lernerville for 3 nights. Okay. Some other shit going on. Thompson's running this week. If you got Racing America, they're racing tomorrow night, the Outlaw Open Modifieds. So that's usually a good show. My wife is unfortunately having knee surgery tomorrow, so I don't think I'll be able to make it out to that without landing myself just firmly in the center of the doghouse for the rest of my waking life. But there are modifieds in New England, so
maybe skip that one.
You
come back around to it another time.
Yeah, we'll deal with that later.
From one calendar year from now.
Exactly. Yeah. So I guess that means my next trip to the racetrack is going to be Loudon for that whole weekend up there. Maybe go see Kyle Busch run a not a late model, but what do you call it, a pro stock at Lee, and then the modified tour, and of course Cup Series and Xfinity. So until then, I will be homebound watching it on TV while you guys are out there seeing the real thing.
Yeah.
Not in Chicago though, I guess.
No. No. Won't be there. I did see on Instagram today that Ryan Preece will be bartending at Roberts in Nashville on Thursday. So if anyone's going to Nashville and wants to buy a beer from Ryan Preece at the best bar on Broadway.
Roberts really is the best bar in Nashville, I would say, even.
Yeah.
Hipsters be damned. They'll tell you some other shithole, but I'm telling you, Roberts is, you want to see like the best of old Broadway and also some just hot shit country music, that's the place to go. Good bologna burgers,
affordable.
Too. And it's affordable. That's a fact. Yeah. Just can't bring your backpack in there, just so you know.
Oh, okay.
Can't bring your backpack. I'm serious. Like, I couldn't go in last time I was there because I had it with me, and I was like, kind of on foot waiting for my like hotel room to open up. Mm. And I couldn't get in because I had a bag, and I get that. Yeah. But, so if you're visiting Roberts, just be aware of that. But, yeah, stuff it in a trash can somewhere or something.
Well, speaking of bags and races, I just looked at my group chat for this trip to Atlanta, and it looks like we're going to be sitting right underneath the champion suites, not super far from the start-finish line. I can't tell exactly how far up the grandstands, but it looks like we got fairly decent seats. So.
That's cool. Nice. What's the deal with Atlanta? Before we get out of here, you can bring your own beer in, right? It's SMI.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you guys get into outside the racetrack? Do you guys camp there? Are you just stopping in, hanging out? You know, you staying with friends? Like, what do you do in Atlanta these days before you go to the track?
Well, I live like an hour and a half from the track, so...
Yeah,
it's an
old hat to you.
At the comfort of my own home.
That's the best. That really is the best.
I know we wanted to camp out at the track, but it just didn't work out financially or with people's driver's licenses as far as, like, I think... So my one buddy that actually... My buddy that lives in Atlanta... When I say driver license, I mean, like...
Spill the tea,
I mean... It's the class of tractor or the class of trailer we had access to. So my buddy lives in Atlanta.
Oh, you mentioned
can't
that.
Do a tractor pull. Gotcha.
Yes, no tractor pulling. My buddy in Atlanta who is we're going to be staying with, he works in the TV industry, and he had access to some sort of like trailer that they use for shooting that we could have rented for the weekend, but I don't think anybody had the right class of driver's license.
It's not fixed axle or whatever.
Shit like that. So now we're just going for the day, I guess. So.
Well, that'll be fun. Atlanta's fun. I haven't been there in many, many years, so I'm sure. Drew, have you got any recommendations for bars to go to? Or?
When I lived in Atlanta, I lived at the Earl. So.
Oh, yeah, that's
the
right.
Earl. Flatiron's a favorite of mine. That's about it.
The Earl is good.
Within walking distance of each other, and I just walked back and forth.
Well, the track is like... It's out in Hampton, right? It's kind of in the middle of nowhere a little bit.
Yeah, it's Hampton. It's like maybe 30 minutes south of the city.
Yeah.
There's nothing in Hampton. I have no recommendations for Hampton.
Not even a Hooters or an Applebee's?
I don't know.
Man, that's what Google's for, I guess. Well, shit, I'm jealous of you guys. I wish I could go, and I'm sure I'll get Atlanta on my list at some point.
Yeah.
Well, as long as
we'll be down in Charlotte this fall, I saw.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I guess I could do a little plugs here. Yeah, my band's going down to Richmond, Charlotte, a couple other places. These Wild Plains, that is. And I should have had the dates pulled up, but
October 13th at the Beaver.
Woo! And I think it's the 12th or the 14th. I'm in Richmond, one of those two. So you can do your own research on the internet. Yeah, we'll be down south in October. I'm really looking forward to it. Again, those are two of my favorite places to play, particularly Charlotte. Got a lot of a lot of good friends and family down there that I love very much, and looking forward to lighting the Beaver on fire with them yet again. Brian, you got to come down, buddy.
Yeah, come to the Beav.
We'll see. So that weekend is, or just before that weekend, is my 40th birthday, and it's also the weekend of this massive citywide garage sale that I go to every year. It's like a big business trip for me. So I don't know if I'll be able to pull that off, but it's possible. We'll see.
I think you should celebrate your 40th birthday with us at the Thirsty Beaver the weekend after that. Put it on
I will keep it. I will keep it in the calendar. It's a possibility.
Hold him accountable, folks. You can find Brian on Twitter.
Yeah, he'll respond.
He will respond. Unlike some of these other bitch ass motherfuckers on Twitter, Brian will clap back. So you put pressure on him to come out and hang out to fly out very far away from home to hang out at a fucking postage stamp sized bar for a free show that his idiot friend is playing. So
you only turn 40 once.
It's true, and the Beaver is a good place to do it. I'm telling you.
I will keep that in mind.
I've turned 40 about 6 times in that place. So. Tell you that.
Oh, fuck.
Well, as always, you can find us at Meet Me at Applebee's on Instagram, Meet Me at DeBees on Twitter. I'm Speedway Screens on all the things, and speedwaytsj.etsy.com. And here, everybody else is begrudging plugs.
Yep. Snake Mountain _ True Love. That's it.
We doggies. Get my Rob Motes _unofficial on Instagram and Twitter, which I don't really post on either of them. But again, my band's These Wild Plains. We do have shows coming up finally. That actually wasn't the announcement I was going to talk about. I mentioned a couple weeks ago. That's still coming down the pipe. Nice. But we are playing shows down south, and I'd love to see all y'all out there. I know some of you listening to this or have seen us before and hung out with us in Charlotte and Richmond. I'd love to see you again.
Hell yeah. All right, folks. Well, thanks again for joining us at Applebee's, and we will talk to y'all next week.